Welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza. This program is recorded via remote, and here are some of the stories we are covering today, Friday, May 1st, 2020. Sudanese authorities extend a countrywide lockdown to prevent the spread of COVID-19.
وبالتالي من مسؤوليتنا كدولة نحو مواطنينا أن نعمل على سلامتهم.
This measure is taken as part of our responsibility for the safety of our citizens.
And the UN says COVID-19 is causing stress on millions of people displaced by conflict.
Groups at particular risk include female-headed households, unaccompanied and separated children, elderly people, LGBTI persons.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Sudan's transitional government has imposed a nationwide lockdown to try to stop the spread of COVID-19. Health officials say the number of confirmed cases is on the rise because citizens are not following preventive directives issued by authorities. The Sudanese High-Level Task Force for COVID-19 says anyone who violates the directives will be punished. Michael Atit reports for VOA from Khartoum.
Professor Sadiq Taur, a member of Sudan's Sovereign Council who heads the COVID-19 high-level task force, says for the past 24 hours, the country has confirmed 67 new cases, raising the total number to 442. He says three more people have died in the past 24 hours, bringing the death toll to 31. 39 patients have fully recovered. 13 of Sudan's 18 states have confirmed at least one case of coronavirus. Speaking in Arabic, Taur says the government has no other option but to impose a total lockdown to try to prevent the virus from spreading.
This
measure is taken as part of our responsibility for the safety of our citizens, to protect them from the carelessness of opportunists who are trying to gain benefit despite the ongoing pandemic.
A week ago, the government banned all travel from Khartoum to other parts of the country and vice versa. But according to Health Minister Akram Ali Tom, some drivers continue to smuggle people from Khartoum to other states. Taur says members of the high-level task force believe interstate travel is contributing to the rapid rise on COVID-19 cases across the country. He says people have to stop gathering for prayers or other types of social gatherings.
The majority of infections came through individuals who came from neighboring countries and those who traveled from Khartoum to other states. Some also got it through local transmissions, which are a clear violation of the health directives.
Taur says authorities will penalize anyone who violates the lockdown unless they are granted special permission to travel.
Punishment under the Health Emergency Act includes imprisonment, quarantine, fine, and confiscation of assets such as cars, which are used to smuggle travelers between the states.
Osman Haddadi, a resident of Khartoum's East Sahafa neighborhood, welcomes the government's decision. Speaking in Arabic, Haddadi says the government should also impose restrictions on traditional practices in order to stop the spread of the pandemic.
Our traditions in Sudan have contributed a lot to the quick spread of the virus. The social life of our people is so much connected, and there are some practices that we need to drop. Otherwise, this virus will kill a lot of our citizens.
Traditional practices include shaking hands, hugging while greeting, and eating in a communal style. Luca Lawrence Ndenge, a South Sudanese who resides in Khartoum's Eastern Nile district, also supports the total lockdown, but says the decision could hurt certain groups of people.
It's a wise decision, but it has an impact on the nation itself, especially on those who depend on daily life to run their lives. It will be difficult for them to run their life because they depend on daily income.
On Wednesday, Minister Ali Tom said the country was running out of medical supplies to fight the pandemic unless it quickly received more supplies from international aid agencies. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Khartoum.
Cameroon has eased restrictions put in place to curb COVID-19, which has so far caused 1,900 confirmed infections and 63 deaths in the country, the highest in Central Africa. But the return to normal operations for restaurants and public transportation comes as Cameroon's neighbors have refused to grant access to people crossing the border. Mukedwen Kinzeka reports from Yaoundé.
Cameroon Prime Minister Joseph John Goute, speaking on state radio and TV Thursday night, said measures taken to contain COVID-19 spread created economic and social hardships, especially in the transport, hotel and catering sectors. Goute said Cameroon's ability to contain the spread of COVID-19 has allowed President Paul Biya to ease some of the restrictions he imposed to stop the spread of the coronavirus.
The actions taken by the government to contain this pandemic are beginning to bear fruit. Although screening tests reveal new cases of coronavirus positive patients, the number of people declared healed of this disease in our country has been on the rise. Furthermore, the mortality rate from this virus remains low.
Goute said bars, restaurants, and leisure facilities can now operate after 6 p.m. if customers and users respect safety measures such as wearing protective masks and staying at least 2 meters apart. Goute also announced tax forgiveness, financial assistance to companies, and increases in family allowances and old age pensions as compensations for the effects of COVID-19. As Goute was announcing that the restrictions in Cameroon had been eased, neighboring Chad, Central African Republic, Equatorial Guinea and Gabon announced that they were protecting their populations from the spread of COVID-19 to their countries by refusing to grant entry to people traveling from Cameroon. Justo Javendong Engono, governor of Equatorial Guinea's Kientem province that shares a boundary with Cameroon's south region, spoke on Equatorial Guinea State TV.
Dans le pays la CEMAC, nous sommes des pays frères.
He says although the Economic Community of Central African States CEMAC, which includes Cameroon, Chad, Central African Republic, Equatorial Guinea, Republic of the Congo, and Gabon, has always stood for the free movement of persons and goods, special measures must be taken to protect civilians whenever there are health hazards, and that is why Equatorial Guinea has stopped people from crossing over from Cameroon. He says even Equatorial Guineans who are returning from Cameroon must be quarantined at the border for 2 weeks to certify that they are not infected by COVID-19 before they can go back to their homes. Truck driver Didentama says on his way with supplies from Douala in Cameroon to Bangui in the landlocked CAR, he was refused access to CAR at the Cameroon border town of Garoua Boulaye. Speaking via a messaging app, he says his truck was disinfected and handed to a CAR driver while he was asked to wait at Garoua Boulaye. He says he was told that Cameroon has the highest number of confirmed COVID-19 cases in the whole of Central Africa, and CAR has decided not to admit any Cameroonian traveling to its territory until the spread of the virus is contained. He says he personally thinks that his rights are abused because drivers who are of CAR nationality are allowed to transport goods from Douala in Cameroon right to Bangui in CAR while he must stop at the border. Cameroon has also announced that schools that were closed March 17 as a result of COVID-19 will resume on June 1, 2020, but that its National Day on May 20 and Labor Day on May 1 will not be celebrated. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Yaoundé.
And here in the United States, U.S. President Donald Trump did not extend federal coronavirus social distancing guidelines that expired on Thursday and expressed optimism that states can relax restrictions and reopen their economy at their own pace. Still, some public health experts are concerned of potential consequences. Vida Kwasara has more from Washington.
Restaurants in the U.S. state of Georgia have joined other businesses that are now allowed to serve customers after a month of lockdown.
We're doing the best we can to follow the guidelines set forth by the governor, by the president.
U.S. President Donald Trump did not extend federal social distancing guidelines that expired Thursday. He expressed optimism states can relax their own restrictions and that the ailing economy will soon rebound.
I think you're going to see economic numbers that are going to be fantastic. I believe it very strongly.
That despite Labor Department figures showing about 30 million Americans filed jobless claims since mid-March. Federal Reserve Chairman Jerome Powell has a more pessimistic outlook than the president.
The ongoing public health crisis will weigh heavily on economic activity, employment, and inflation in the near term and poses considerable risks to the economic outlook over the medium term.
The White House in mid-April released guidelines for states to reopen their economies. Called gating requirements, it's based on a decline in documented coronavirus cases and hospital preparedness, among other factors. Anand Parekh is the chief medical advisor at the Bipartisan Policy Center.
You have about 30 states that are now either in the process of reopening or thinking about it. Probably only a handful actually even meet the initial White House gating requirements there.
President Trump said his administration is working with the private sector to accelerate vaccine development. The nation's top health expert says a drug called Remdesivir is showing promise. Director of National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases, Anthony Fauci.
The mortality rate trended towards being better in the sense of less deaths in the remdesivir group. 8% versus 11% in the placebo group.
But for right now, before any area or state rushes to reopen, the think tank Bipartisan Policy Center wants communities to keep evaluating their own progress to protect the public's health. Again, Bipartisan Policy Center's Anand Parekh.
Declining cases or the percentage of positive tests in a sustained manner for at least a couple of weeks. The second is increased testing capacity to not only just test individuals who have symptoms, but also vulnerable populations. A third is having a healthcare system that is under capacity. And fourth is, again, having a public health system that can do the important detective work and contact tracing.
Even in states technically still under lockdown, many flout policies to stay indoors, including beachgoers in Southern California. Patsy Widakuswara, VOA News.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, millions of people displaced by conflict are in dire conditions. Find out why after this break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what job would you be really bad at and why?
If I was to be a doctor, I don't think I would do it well because I'm not actually confident at treating people. But I have that humanity of I can treat someone well, what, but I can't treat you like a patient.
I'll be really bad at any job that would tell me what to wear. I'm a person that doesn't like to use tie, especially. So any job that would tell me I have to talk in, I have to use tie, I have to resume by 7 a.m. and all, I'll be bad at that job because it's not part of my ethics.
I'm not so good with handling gadgets, electronics, and also I believe I'll be very bad at computer engineering. I wouldn't know how to go about it. I wouldn't know how to fix, you know, things here and there.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
South Sudan in Focus is now on WhatsApp. Send us a message on +1 202-630-8011. Tell us what's happening in your area or give us your feedback on the stories you hear on South Sudan in Focus. We look forward to hearing from you on WhatsApp. That number again, +1 202-630-8011.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. The UN Refugee Agency warns that more than 70 million people forcibly displaced by conflict and violence throughout the world are facing unprecedented hardships due to the impact of the COVID-19 pandemic. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
No region in the world is spared from the devastating health and economic consequences of COVID-19. Among those most affected are the forcibly displaced, including more than 25 million refugees, most of whom are being sheltered in some of the world's poorest countries. For example, the UN Refugee Agency says it has been receiving desperate appeals for financial aid from hundreds of thousands of refugees across the Middle East and North Africa, who have been unable to work since lockdowns came into force in March. It says more than 5.6 million Syrians who have taken refuge in neighboring countries, as well as 6 million people forcibly displaced within Syria, are in urgent need of money, health care, and necessities. UNHCR spokesman Andre Mahecic says an alarming number of refugees in Lebanon, Egypt, Iraq, and Jordan have lost their livelihoods because of the pandemic. He says many refugees are forced to skip meals, while others are threatened with evictions because they cannot pay the rent.
Groups at particular risk include female-headed households, unaccompanied and separated children, elderly people, LGBTI persons. Their situations can be improved through emergency assistance, notably through cash grants. Across this region, many are at risk of losing shelters and they are running out of means to support themselves.
Mahecic notes millions of Afghan refugees, including those in Iran and Pakistan, are facing a similar situation. He notes Afghanistan itself is facing the prospect of having its medical and social services overwhelmed due to the spread of COVID-19. This as an increasing number of Afghans return home. Elsewhere in the world, the UNHCR spokesman says the numbers of homeless and destitute Venezuelans throughout Latin America are increasing as jobs dry up because of COVID-19 lockdown measures.
Some are now resorting to survival sex, begging or hawking in the streets. Others are at risk of being prey to smugglers and illegal armed groups. With growing fears of social unrest, xenophobia and discrimination across the region, they are also on the rise.
The UNHCR reports it is working to provide emergency aid, including cash-based assistance and shelter across all major refugee operations. It notes the coronavirus crisis is worsening existing dire humanitarian needs globally. It says an infusion of cash is urgently needed to support these crucial aid operations. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Press freedom groups say West Africa is seeing attacks on journalists as nations deal with the spread of COVID-19. The Ghana-based Media Foundation for West Africa cites assaults, detention, and legal action against journalists covering outbreaks and related issues. Stacey Nord reports for VOA from Accra.
West Africa has seen improvements in press freedom since the 1990s as democracy has taken root in the region. Since the coronavirus pandemic began, though, press freedom groups say security forces have assaulted journalists covering the outbreaks in Ghana, Nigeria, Senegal, and Sierra Leone, among other countries. The Media Foundation for West Africa's Muhib Saeed says reporters have also had their equipment seized or destroyed.
The wanton attacks on journalists covering the pandemic have the potential to undermine the morale of the media personnel and hamper the media's vital contribution towards efforts to contain the spread of the disease. There is a sense of siege among media workers which does not augur well for its role as a platform for educating, informing, and sensitizing the population about the COVID-19.
The foundation also monitors claims made in the media about the pandemic and has appealed to reporters to double-check facts before publishing to stop the spread of disinformation. The New York-based Committee to Protect Journalists' Jonathan Rosen has also been monitoring attacks on the press in West Africa during the pandemic. He says governments are using accusations of false news on the coronavirus as a pretext to crack down on press freedoms. He spoke from New York via a messaging application.
Now, with authorities looking to curb misinformation in relation to the coronavirus, there are additional concerns that legislation or emergency acts that include provisions that criminalize misinformation may be used against the press.
The committee cites instances of reporters arrested or detained while covering the coronavirus pandemic in Ghana, Nigeria, and Sierra Leone. There are bright spots in West Africa, though. Gambia was a hotspot for press violations under longtime dictator Yahya Jammeh. Gambian journalist Sherif Bojang Jr. fled arrest to exile in Senegal, where he lived for almost a decade until Jammeh was forced to step down in 2017 under international pressure. He returned to Gambia and became president of the Gambia Press Union, which has been working with officials to protect press freedoms, including in connection with COVID-19 reporting. Speaking from Gambia via a messaging application, Bojang says the union was quick to speak out when an official threatened journalists who were investigating a quarantine centre.
We felt that the director's threats were misplaced. And of course, this was an attack on press freedom. And we engaged the government. And then that never happened. Journalists continue to do their work without any harm.
Under Jammeh's rule, press freedom groups documented cases of journalists being tortured, illegally detained, forcibly disappeared, and even murdered. Stacey Knott for VOA News, Accra, Ghana.
The coronavirus pandemic is touching the lives of almost everyone in the world and has brought to light the many brave people on the front line to provide security, medical care, and food. But ahead of Sunday's World Press Freedom Day, journalists are also critical soldiers on the front line of the pandemic, providing truth and factual information for citizens to make critical decisions to stay safe. International Edition's Laurie London spoke to Courtney Rutsch, Advocacy Director with the Committee to Protect Journalists, who says members of the press are risking their lives, are facing bans for reporting the truth, and being verbally attacked from strong armed world leaders uncomfortable with the truth.
I think journalists are one of the underappreciated frontline workers during the coronavirus. Of course, we are so grateful for the work that nurses and grocers and first responders are doing, but we really have to understand that many journalists themselves are first responders, especially photojournalists, video journalists, and those print reporters who are going out to the front lines, whether we're talking about the hospitals where people are being treated for COVID or whether we're talking about the vast social, economic and political implications that this pandemic is having. And so, you know, we're really concerned at the Committee to Protect Journalists, both about how to help journalists stay safe, because they are oftentimes putting their health at risk to go report the story. Obviously, not every story can be told remotely from a computer or a phone. And we're really concerned about the blowback against journalists in many parts of the world and the press freedom implications of this global pandemic, especially as we approach World Press Freedom Day.
Of course, they're putting their lives on the lines if they need to go out and cover the story in real time. As you said, everything can't be done online, but also they've been threatened, they've been banned, they've been in some places around the world imprisoned just for trying to get the truth out about the virus.
This is an unprecedented pandemic, but unfortunately, some of the responses that we're seeing are not out of line with what we saw in the aftermath of September 11th and the War on Terror, where you had this widespread acknowledgement that terrorism is a problem, but it gets warped and misconstrued by governments around the world who then use that as a cover to clamp down on press freedom and on independent reporting. So that's what we're seeing with the coronavirus. We're seeing in countries like Iraq, Egypt, Iran, South Africa, really around the world, that journalists who are reporting on coronavirus, especially if it has to do with official statistics versus what other reporting is showing about how many cases or how many deaths there have been, that, you know, these journalists are then getting caught up and either, as you said, arrested, detained, in the case of Egypt, kicked out of the country. In the case of Iraq, Reuters had its license suspended temporarily. So there's this real battle over the truth. And I think one of the challenges is that there isn't necessarily a truth. There is an evolving set of facts, which may look different over time as new information comes to light, as new discoveries about the virus are made. So on the one hand, there isn't necessarily one global truth, although there are certainly authorities and officials who have, you know, valid information. And then you couple that with the interest of many countries in controlling the information environment, in making sure that there is no information out there that doesn't comport with the official version of reality, which in many cases does not comport to reality. And journalists are getting caught in the crosshairs because theirs is a public interest job. Part of what they're doing is informing the public about how to keep safe, what is the situation on the ground. They need to report on what the authorities are doing, and they have to help hold those authorities to account during this unprecedented pandemic, especially when government authorities have so much power and are giving themselves so much power because of this pandemic. And so we need journalists to be holding them to account and making sure that the public is informed.
That would certainly require a journalist to really dig in and find out what is happening. Facts are so incredibly important right now in saving lives with this virus.
And the problem is also that this is not just about facts, right? Of course, the journalists are out reporting, you know, on coronavirus and trying to get at facts, but they're also reporting on what public officials are saying. And in many cases, in many countries, even the topmost leaders are not providing the accurate information or are giving incorrect advice. Mm. So they're having to deal with, you know, how do they navigate that very complex situation? How do you report on something newsworthy that a president has said, while at the same time recognizing that maybe what was said is not accurate or is contrary to health advice? And of course, there are many stories that might not be directly about the spread of the pandemic, but every story now seems to have some sort of coronavirus implications. So whether you're talking about, you know, how this is impacting poor or disenfranchised communities, just trying to get out to those communities can put journalists at risk. We've seen attacks by police on journalists in India and South Africa, as well as by the public who doesn't necessarily understand, you know, what journalists are doing out there covering these issues. So journalists are facing a lot of challenges, and I don't necessarily think that much of the world really understands how essential their work is at a time like this.
That's our show for this Friday. We now leave you with the song Chok Tok by Nyan Chol Matiang. I'm John Tanza. Thanks for listening, and remember to stay at home. Wash your hands with soap, practice social distancing, and do not escape from quarantine centers. Join us next week for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
Tarawih na kibat tong majar.